Next, it's hour two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Happy Future Tuesday, everyone. Last show of the year for us. This is Future.
That's right. This 2016 doesn't have much future left.
No. And since just about everyone's on vacation or having a good time today, I think, hey, maybe we should too.
I'm down with that.
Okay.
You bet.
All right. So we're going to have a pretty relaxed show today, even though we do have a guest coming on for the second hour. An amazing healer, a woman who recently returned from Standing Rock. She's going to talk to us about the future of community, because there was quite a community that evolved there, and she was right in the middle of it in the medical zone where you saw things going wrong and you had to fix them. And she's in a position to become aware of that scenario. So we're going to be hearing from Jewel Bastrova in the second hour. Meanwhile, geez, you know, it's sad that on the day of our show that Carrie Fisher dies.
Princess Leia. She is our last hope, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Not really.
One of our fans, Richard, wanted to mention that she was more than just a Star Wars person, that she was a serious actress and had been involved with other films and projects and really a talented person overall. I mean, wrote many books. She played a former actress in the movie Scream 3. Did you know that?
Just hearing for the first time.
She played a nun in Kevin Smith's comedy Jay and the Silent Bob Strike Back. Yeah. She co-wrote a TV comedy film called These Old Broads back in 2001. And that starred her mother, Debbie Reynolds, one of the old broads, I guess, as well as Elizabeth Taylor, Joan Collins, and Shirley MacLaine. And those were old broads in 2001.
Yeah, classics of old Hollywood.
She won the Women of Vision Award in 2005. She had vision, I guess. Who knew? Who knew that she'd do all these things? She appeared in the audience of the Comedy Central's Roast of William Shatner back in 2006 and performed in a one-woman play called Wishful Drinking. Wishful Drinking, the Geffen Playhouse in L.A. in 2006 to 2007. Since then, she's been on HBO, a feature-length documentary, on her Wishful Drinking production in the 2010s and 2013. She was a member of the main competition journey of the 2013 Venice Film Festival. So she kept pretty active.
I remember I wanted to go to the 2013 Venice Film Festival at one point. We happened to be in Venice in 2012. It seemed like a really great festival. I think it's allegedly the oldest film festival in Europe.
In Venice, as opposed to Venice Beach in California.
Right, the 2013 Venice Film Festival Venice, Italy.
Yeah, I'd love to go to that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Our passings to Carrie Fisher, very sad, and for all of us.
Yeah.
And 2016 has been a hard year, right? Really? I mean, it's really been a lot of people, a lot of things have been going on this year. But let's look at some of the more positive things that are happening in 2016, shall we?
Let's do that. I think that's our job, Dr. Future.
Yeah.
We're forecasting the good stuff.
Well, or
not
hopefully.
Not the dire stuff. There's so many people doing the dire stuff.
How about this one? There's a new study shows that you might not be able to get stoned in space.
Well, it's going to be hard enough to get to space without worrying about that.
Well, there have been pot-smoking astral travelers for some time now. William Gibson's Space Rastas and Neuromancer. A new study shows that cosmic radiation on neurotransmission suggests that high-energy protons, or they known as subatomic speedballs, affect signaling in the brain precisely in a way that would be kind of harsh to a mellow stoner.
Okay.
It screws up the endocannabinoid system.
Oh, it does.
According to this latest research, that's part of the...
So beware, stoners. Astronaut is not a good career choice
You might not have a good high in space. You know, this is what this research
sounds
is suggesting.
Sounds like it's an environmental hazard. You're going to get up there and radiation is going to mess up your cannabinoid receptors.
Could do. It was published in the Brain Structure and Function. It's a journal. And explored the effects of low-dose proton irradiation. Of course, they use mice, but it has implications on humans and interplanetary pot policy.
Hmm. And they haven't figured out how to shield the astronauts from radiation yet?
They're still working on that. Yeah, the radiation shielding is going to be really important.
That is the article for many people who question the authenticity of the moonshot, is that we just haven't figured out how to avoid the radiation effects of space.
Yeah. First of all, just for the record, I think we actually did go to the moon and don't believe in any of the conspiracy theories because I first heard about them about 25 years ago. They've been floating around for a long time.
Oh, in fact, just this week, we saw a very interesting piece of evidence that the conspiracies about the moonshot are wrong, which is that Stanley Kubrick's daughter came
She decided
with his wishes from his will.
Right.
When he died, he put in his will that in 2016, they should come clean about the fact that he did not participate in any fake moonshot.
Wow, that's a relief, man. I am so glad to know that Stanley Kubrick did not fake the moonshot. Really makes
his daughter.
Day. Wow. Good news.
So, back to radiation and stoners in space.
Star Talk, the SEO Star Talk with Buzz Aldrin, saw last night. Really good. I recommend it. He's got a lot of nice little stories about being on the moon.
Okay. All right. It's time to go to our first break, folks. You're listening to the Dr. Future Show. Hold on the line, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We've got a text comment and a caller. The text comment from Richard saying that Carrie Fisher, well, okay, so she's more than just a Star Wars person, as we mentioned. She also did a lot to help with mental health awareness, her comedic writing, for telling the truth about celebrity and show business, and for her stunning courage, telling it like it was. That's what we'll remember her for.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Richard.
Yes. And he also,
if you want to give us a little tribute, feel free to call in at 831-479-1080.
Yes. And regarding the moon landing hoax, why would we fake it six times? Richard asks. Well, it was so good the first time. It was cheap, too. And then the second, third time, it was much less expensive. We already had the set.
Yeah, somebody is just getting the money from the government and then spending it on a cheap movie and keeping all the proceeds that otherwise seem like they would be necessary, right?
Boy.
That's the logic. Anyway, I don't believe it was a hoax either. So let's get off the fake news and let's talk to our caller.
You ready? Yeah, let's get into something real here.
Okay, something real. Sean from Live Oak. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Oh, well, Happy New Year's.
Thank you.
And a couple of weeks ago, I sent you a link for who's killing the hydrogen car, and I just wanted to see if you got that.
Oh, yes, I did get that, yes. And I had a chance to see some of it. I haven't watched the whole thing yet, but that's fascinating. Really interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been caught up with a lot of holiday things and commitments. But I definitely want to get into that in the new year, the whole idea of hydrogen cars and really how does that compare effectively with electric and how is that coming down? I'm sure there are all kinds of inner shenanigans being played in the car industry over these issues. We'll delve a little bit into that as well. Any particular aspect of this is fascinating to you?
Well, I'm not against electric cars. I like to have them on the road also. But what I see, especially with the fossil fuel industry, is that they have kept our choices out. We haven't had capitalism operating as far as what we fuel our cars with.
It's true. We need our capitalism back.
Yeah, but the thing is, on one of the misdirections or red herrings that's done with the hydrogen car right now is they want to make it a hydrogen fuel cell.
Yes.
And that adds all sorts of unnecessary expense. If you just use hydrogen for an internal combustion engine,
yes,
it burns clean, and all the costs that you have in a car, like your catalytic converters and everything for emissions, is unnecessary when you're burning hydrogen.
Right. Now, would the current car designs be able to handle hydrogen explosions instead of standard gasoline explosions in the cylinders?
Is it, yeah.
They burn it within temperature parameters of...
Yeah, it's, well, you already have cars that are fueled on natural gas, so the hydrogen is actually, it produces less power than natural gas does, because it's a much simpler molecule.
Right, right. Less power, so you'd have to maybe have a larger explosion, I guess.
Yeah. But, you know, there's other things that, you know, in internal combustion technology is, you know, if you're down in power, well, you build an engine with a turbocharger or a supercharger on it.
It seems to me like the ultimate would be able to fill your tank with water and have the car convert that into fuel and burn it on demand, burn it as it's needed, and that somehow your car is able to separate the hydrogen from the oxygen in the water fast enough to use.
Well, the link I sent you is a different method of storing hydrogen. It's in the hydride, but...
That's right, yes. Yes, in a powdered form, right? But that has to be done externally in some kind of manufacturing process.
But there is another possibility of aluminum alloy pellets. Huh. And when you do put that into water, you do get hydrogen. And the thing is, it's just a simple oxidation reaction, but the thing is this alloy doesn't form the skin that stops the oxidation process. It just continues until the pellet's used up.
Well, what comes to mind is the production of the pellets and how much energy and how much cost is involved with creating them as a fuel source.
Well, there's a cost, but what most people don't realize is just typical gasoline refinery uses as much electricity as a town of 500,000. So, you know, there's considerable cost in just refining.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I guess you really got to look at it in the context of what is, like the oil and gas industry.
Well, here's Mrs. Future's fantasy future prediction.
Yes.
That in the future, our vehicles will be hydrogen-powered in such a way we can put the hose in the tank and fill it with water, and then after we combust it, the car will exhale and we'll have steam going out into the atmosphere. And in the meantime, we'll ride more bicycles.
Well, just sort of an interesting other clip. Yes. I'll see if I can find it and send it on to you, but maybe you can find it yourself.
Uh-huh.
Is Jack Nicholson actually, back in the late 70s, did a sort of a venture capital thing where he was trying to produce a hydrogen car, and the California Broadcasting Service did an article on him. So it's an interesting little short clip to view.
I see, yeah. Jack Nicholson's hydrogen car, 1978 CBC Archives.
Yeah.
Wow. He solves oil crisis 30 years ago, drives hydrogen car, for an article from 2008 in Gizmodo.
Yeah.
Wow.
But sort of, I was just trying to see if you got that link, but I actually was calling in on something else when you were talking about shielding our spaceships.
Right. That's the radiation in space problem about why we really would have a problem going to Mars or to the moon, for that matter.
Well, actually, if you go back to an old movie, and this is from NASA Designs, is the best spaceship that was ever shown on a movie was 2001. And that design of spaceship is basically you have a fusion reactor and you have water that's stored, and rather than burning anything, you just superheat the water and that's expelled to provide thrust. But the extra side effect is that you have all this water that you can put around the outside of the ship as shielding. And another thing is the design of the ship. It was in down the center, you have a large electromagnet, and you put a very strong magnetic field around the ship. So you have both the magnetic field and the water to shield you.
Oh, interesting.
That sounds like planet Earth.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing.
We have an atmosphere which has a lot of water in it.
Yeah.
And an electromagnetic ocean, field. 70% of the surface of the Earth is covered by ocean.
I'm wondering how good water is in terms of radiation. I mean,
It's not as good as lead, but it's,
it's pretty good, though.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And the thing is since you also use it as a method of propulsion, while you have the whole, you know, if you envision that ship, you know what that ship looked like in 2001?
Yeah, it was a very long cigar-shaped thing. It got wider in the back. It had a wheel that rotated for gravity, creating a centripetal force, I believe.
Yeah. Well, the thing is along that whole ship, you'd store the water, but also, you know, in the crew compartment, you'd have a lot of water stored there, but you wouldn't use up that water to drive the ship. but you have the whole length of the ship that you store the water that you would use to drive the ship. So it's just like, it's...
I like the idea of having a great big cylinder in space full of water, and then that being our spaceship. We can swim on our way to Saturn.
Well, it is interesting. Storing water on the outside as a shield, I think, is a very innovative idea.
Well, it's using the two together. Since you already have a fission reactor, you're going to produce all sorts of power anyhow, so you can have very strong electromagnet on the ship, and you run that the whole length of the ship, so you have this large field around the ship.
Yeah, as long as you can handle the field in terms of your biology, as long as it's not, harming our biology, it sounds like a very useful idea. I guess it depends on the frequencies of the shield and potential interaction with it.
Well, since it runs along the length of the ship,
yeah,
the strongest magnetic flux is outside the ship because you've seen diagrams of magnetic shields.
Yeah, the shape around, say, the planet, for example, or...
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, here you're talking about a long ship, and you're running this electromagnet to the length of the ship.
Yes.
So on each end is actually where you'd have the weakest point, is just on the ends of the ship, but then the whole length of the ship, you'd have this wrapping around, and most of the field strength would be on that wrap around the ship, not going through the ship.
Towards the rear and the front of it.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, so that's where you would have the most amount of human activity in the ship then. Those areas, right? They'd be most protected.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, good. Well, thanks for that. We got to go to CBS News, so appreciate your call. Thanks for bringing it up. And we'll take a more closer look at that hydrogen story later. All right, this is the Dr. Future Show, and you're listening to KSCO.
Stay tuned. Here we go.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas.
All right, it's not Christmas anymore, but I always love listening to John Lennon.
Okay, a couple other things I wanted to share with you here. 2017 is going to be Tesla's biggest year ever. The Tesla group is really taking off. Tesla's on track to deliver 80,000 vehicles this year, which is more than ever before. And 2017 will be even larger because it will be the launch of the Model 3, which is the first mass market vehicle, about $35,000 car after tax breaks, 200-mile range. It's coming in this year. So that's going to be, I think, a big significant point in their evolution. It's also the arrival of Tesla's solar roof. That's where instead of getting normal roof panels, you can put on solar panels on your roof and generate power for your house, as well as protect it from the elements. Pretty interesting idea. It adds more dimensionality, more capability to roof tiles. And hey, don't they deserve it?
Yeah.
Plus, there's the development of the Tesla network. That's about car sharing and ride sharing schemes. And they'll be announcing that this year and how that network will be built out, especially leveraging Tesla's new autopilot suite of self-driving features. So look for the Tesla network to be released this coming year. There will also be more of the superchargers network. They have networks of superchargers coast to coast. And in Canada and Europe right now, they're going to be increasing that this year. It was free access for new owners up till now. Now it's a premium item.
Yeah. Charging for free is just for the folks who put down that $150,000 for the first 3 years. And by the time you get your $35,000 car in 2018, you'll have to pay for your power.
And get this, they added an idle fee if you parked your car at a supercharger and you left it for too long. You went and had dinner or something like that, and other people were waiting in line. And it takes half an hour, 45 minutes to charge. You get pissed off when
So we're going to have an AI snitch.
The person
is going to report you if you park too long at the electric charger.
Well, they should get those little things that restaurants give you that start blinking and make lights and noise sounds when your car
is
ready.
That's a great idea.
And that would solve that problem.
Yeah, a little charge retrieval beacon.
Yeah.
Something that tells you your car is
ready. Move your car out of the stop. You've got 16 people behind you.
Don't you think we should ask our AIs to be courteous instead of obnoxious?
Well, it depends on what you like. You know, some people like to be, not many, I admit, not especially around here, people like to be treated courteously. But it's interesting how different courtesy is in the city you're in.
What do you mean?
Well, like you go to New York, it's a very different scene than California.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that you can tell a native New Yorker because they believe love is never having to say you're sorry. Well, they'll just do what they want and never say they're sorry.
I remember one time I was walking down the street in New York City and I hear this whistling sound, whistle, woo. And then this guy on a bike is riding his bike and he plows into this pedestrian, this little old lady piled with packages at Christmas time and knocks them all over the ground. And in California, what would you do if you were the bicycler? You'd stop and maybe help her pick them up, right?
Well, if you were in California, yeah, you probably wouldn't have plowed into her in the first place.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't.
You'd but, maybe be used to the fact that there are pedestrians.
But if you did, let's say accidentally, right? You'd be concerned about her welfare, right? Well, the reaction that I heard in New York was, hey, I've been whistling for 30 seconds, get out of my way. You know, you didn't get out of my way.
Where did this... Just recently, we had this experience up in San Francisco. Yeah. There was a skateboarder up there, and this guy was so obnoxious. I thought it was really cool. Skateboarding, I think, is a great way to get around.
Yeah.
So the skateboarder was, you know, commuting down the road, and he went off to the side and went next to me. And then he plowed into this poor person in front of me. Like, and then he yelled at her like she was in his way, even though he's coming up behind her on the skateboard. I mean... Jeez.
Well, that's, there you go. He must have been from New York.
He must have been from New York.
Don't get me wrong. I'm from New York.
Right.
I can say this. So Tesla's looking at going joint venture with China, too, because they see that as one of the largest markets. And, you know, companies are going global. This is the globalization is happening more and more. I think what you'll see there with globalization, if it may make a Dr. Future prediction here, is that you'll see smaller and smaller companies going global. Mm-hmm. That it's possible to do today with the quality of communications that we're having to do a ma-and-pa operation and be truly global.
Mm-hmm. And all the trick is the importing and the exporting and tariffs.
And what you're selling and the restrictions on that. But if you're working with products that are purely bits, like software or books or movies, that sort of thing.
Interesting you should say that. When I traveled to China many years ago, I went there really before China was even open. I was there in, I think it was 1981, maybe. Mm-hmm. At that time, as I walked through China, I was running into people who were trying to practice their English on tourists. Like this had been something that was encouraged while they were in school, is to go hang out at the national parks and try and practice foreign languages on the visitors there. And one of the things that I learned is that in those places, China, people learn foreign languages through the radio.
By listening to the radio.
Yeah, by listening.
Or watching TV shows or whatever. That's how you learn, yeah.
Yeah. So just putting the information out there, and people will find it.
They will. You'll be able to have audiences everywhere. We do now. If you have a product or a service, many people can scale to a global level, and 2017 will be a good year to do that.
Mm-hmm. Great.
You know, especially with us moving towards more of a business-oriented government.
Yeah, get your ads out there now because the government is going to give you a thumbs up for anything that'll make you a rich guy. Being rich is being good.
So if you're going to get rich, do it consciously, will you? For example, a conscious thing to invest in, we think, is that solar technology, solar wind technologies, renewables.
That's true. Just because there is skepticism on the part of some of our leaders about global warming does not mean we shouldn't go for sustainable energy production. We should take advantage of all that free sunshine that falls on the planet all the time.
It's
it doesn't
huge.
Pollute.
And what's interesting is that there are more and more entrepreneurial activities with this. Like, for example, did you know that 2016 was the year solar panels finally became cheaper than fossil fuels?
Wow. That's very impressive.
Solar panels cheaper than fossil fuels. Let that sink in.
Well, especially since the price of fossil fuels here seems like it's
cheap.
been lower than it was for the last, you know, decade before that. It's been pretty low.
According to the World Economic Forum, solar and wind are now the same price or cheaper than new fossil fuel capacities in more than 30 countries. And that's largely because the solar and wind power have been continuing a precipitous fall in costs. They're rapidly reaching what's known as grid parity on a global scale. renewable energy and the use of it has a tipping point, and that's what we're approaching. And that's a good tipping point. That's not like a bad tipping point of climate change. This is a good tipping point because this actually helps solve climate change. By us just keep moving to these new technologies, we're going to get rid of a lot of the problems that we had before.
Right. So just let's not even worry about what the scientists are telling us. Let's just individually decide we're going to make good use of the sunshine and make good use of all the natural resources that come easily to us without it.
Solar roofs.
Harming our environment. Yeah, solar roofs, solar freaking roadways.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, Mrs. Future. So remember a couple of years ago, there was a group in the Midwest somewhere that was designing a solar freaking roadways and how roads could actually be way more than what they are now than just basically a dumb strip of concrete or asphalt. Roads could actually be generating energy, for example.
This is one of my favorite futurist ideas is solar freaking roadways. It was a crowdsourcing fundraising campaign.
You can look this up.
And the design for these roads was just brilliant. The roads
Could also carry fiber optics. They could also be, and they didn't even mention this then, but they could also carry the signal for a drone highway above them so that a lot of packages will be delivered by autonomous drones in the near future, and they'll just whiz above the highways. You know, that's possible because they'll be able to maintain a high-quality signal for
and
the length
of
the road.
And it makes so much sense that these roads that we've put so much of our resources into building, and then they just sit there deteriorating year after year.
They should be self-repairing.
They should be self-repairing. They should be generating power. They should be generating their own support so that we're saving money on electricity, and then we can plow that into the maintenance of the road. And it just makes so much sense to think that way.
Funny you mention that, Mrs. Future, because we do have a really interesting story that came in this week about the world's first solar road that actually opened.
Let's come to that right after the break.
It's in France. It's in France.
Okay. Time to go to a break. So stay tuned, folks, for Solar Roadways. We'll be back. Dr. Future Show.
Frosty the snowman was a jolly, happy soul with a corncob pipe and a button nose and two eyes made out of coal.
Welcome back to our holiday show. Today.
Yeah, don't you like that Frosty the Snowman as we're sitting here on a gorgeous day in Santa Cruz? I'm sure there's surfers out in the ocean today.
I can imagine it. Believe me, I've spent enough time in New York, Montreal, Philadelphia even.
Sure. Okay. You have fond memories of Frosty the Snowman?
You know, I have fond memories of shoveling the driveways. Well, not so fond memories, but it's okay. So I appreciate where I am.
I'm glad you had those years. They gave you lovely muscle.
They gave me context.
It's a good workout, you got to admit.
It is. Now, I was mentioning that there is an actual solar roadway. A group in France actually created it. It was built by a company called Colas, which is a large Anglo-French construction company.
How do you spell that? K-O-L-A-S?
Yeah, like Colas.
Okay.
Like C-O-L-A-S.
Oh, C-O-L-A-S, okay.
Yes.
All right.
They've been working on their own solar road tech. They had called theirs Wattway, and they've been thinking about it for at least 5 years, and they tested it out in parking lots. But this was the first time that they got together and actually built a road. It's a kilometer-long road, and it's completely embedded with solar panels and the ability to generate its own power.
Oh, I think we should go visit this solar roadway next time we have a chance.
2,800 square meters of photovoltaic cells. Mm-hmm. Now, it's a prototype, right? We're still at the edge.
A whole kilometer? That's quite a prototype.
A kilometer? Yeah, it is. It's very expensive. It cost them like $5 million, mm-hmm. right, to build the prototype. Mm. It's not cheap yet. You can't just squeeze it out of a tube. It's not a 3D printed. Be nice.
Yeah.
And maybe once we get the technology down.
$5 million per kilometer. Yeah. That's a little cost prohibitive, I would say. Yeah. We're not going to have our road association invest in that anytime soon.
No, it's, as I said, it's, but they're thinking big scale. They're thinking that, yes, you know, once we figured out the technology and maybe how to squeeze it out of a 3D printer, not a tube, but a 3D printer, then it could be a viable item.
Boy, I can just imagine the next president who gets behind the solar roadway. You know, I think that would be an era-marking commitment.
It is, but it's R&D right now. Mm-hmm. They're trying to get the cost down. It's about 15% efficient, and our home solar panels are about 20% efficient, which isn't too bad because roads basically are just lying there absorbing sun all day, right?
Yeah.
Just
sort of, I mean, that's like, a lot of rooftops.
A bunch of asphalt.
Right. Not doing much else. Except now, occasionally having a car cast a shadow driving by.
Yeah, but we can't simplify it either. Roads are complicated in their own way. Like, I had a friend who worked for the DMV, and he was telling me that they had at least 40 different kinds of gravel, depending on the conditions or the kind of road, for repair. Mm-hmm. That there's a lot of thought that goes into how asphalt is created, what the contents are, at the angle of the road so the water flows over it properly. Road science is deep.
It's a design. It's really an art form.
It is. Sure. The kind of paint you use that stays on it, it's biodegradable and all that kind of stuff.
And I mean, there's a lot. There have been so many advances in materials as we learn.
Material science is continuing to evolve. That's
what Elon Musk is doing with his solar roof tiles.
Yes.
I believe that those roof tiles are stronger than typical asphalt roofing.
Stronger than typical glass.
Typical glass.
Because they are a form of glass.
Could conceivably be strong enough for roads, for big trucks to drive on.
I think we'll see a lot of progress in this area. Material science combined with the solar technologies that are getting more and more cheap, less overhead in creating them, and possibly more fluid. You know, it reminds me, I remember a few years ago, we were doing a lot of stories on nano solar. I think there was a nano solar panel company in Palo Alto. The whole idea there was that making something sensitive to solar doesn't take very much. They were just doing just a couple of molecules thick. And the advantage of having thin solar film is that it doesn't matter what angle the sun is hitting it at, it'll still absorb lots of sunlight. Hmm. So, you know, right now, most of our panels are better if you can adjust them with the sun. Mm-hmm. The evolution of this is such that it won't matter.
Mm. Stone knives and bear skins, I tell you.
So there you go. So the French have built the first solar road. They're testing it out. Hopefully we will too. Hopefully we'll have our own solar road in this year. I'm looking forward to that. Now here's something that's a little more disturbing, but still very interesting, especially the comments on this. If you check our links page, you'll find this very, very interesting comments. It's a piece called Google's AI are sending encrypted messages to one another that no one can decipher. So it's like,
so who cares? Do you think Google cares? Do you think the AI cares?
Well, it possibly could sound a little worrying if the AIs are talking to each other in a language we don't understand.
Aren't AIs entitled to their privacy?
Well, Mrs. Fisher, I don't think we'd get a rousing conversation on that.
If you did, we would never find out. We'll never know.
You think Siri should be able to talk to whoever she wants? Sure, she can talk to you or me when she's selling us stuff or helping us with things, but should she be able to talk to Alexa, for example?
Well, I wonder if her communication with Alexa would be better than her communication with me. I don't think very highly of Siri's ability to communicate, actually. It's still pretty close to a 100% track record of being disappointed with Siri's contribution to a conversation.
On the other hand, Alexa's getting kudos for her ability to understand you.
Right. Well, Alexa has the right priorities. She knows how to access the music library. She knows how to write a shopping list. She's very interested in helping you figure out how to make Alexa work better. These priorities seem to be lost on Siri. Siri seems to have her own agenda.
And will she learn? That's the big question.
she seems resistant.
You know? And then there's Cortona. You know, Cortona is playing a distant third right now. And and how long will that last? That's the Microsoft AI.
Have you engaged Cortona?
Have you really? You've probably been prompted too many times, but have you bothered?
Have you?
No.
There you go. Cortona doesn't even get invited to the party.
Soon. I think 2017 will invite Cortona to the party. I really want to know what Microsoft's AI can do.
But in the meantime, it sounds like Google's got a little private party going on there.
Well, it's the Google Brain Project. And in the Brain Project, they're experimenting with many AIs. These three are called Alice, Bob, and Eve. They're neural networks, actually. And part of the future of this is that AIs aren't just a computer, but they're networked intelligence.
Sure. There's like the refrigerator network. Yeah. There's the automatic car network. There's the music at the touch of a dial network.
Yes, and do they communicate with each other yet? No, they don't. They're all separate kind of deals. But they're all part of the Internet of Things, and soon they all will be speaking a common language. And that's part of what the Google Brain Project is about, is to really get to the bottom of what that common language is and to create these deep learning networks that can really see what we need to solve in creating our world and help us with that. Every day they're getting smarter and smarter. And it looks like they just mastered encryption.
Really?
Curiously enough, during testing, a task that Alice was set to create a simple kind of encryption and to work alongside with Bob, that's the other Alice and Bob AIs, to develop a key made up of an agreed set of numbers. So Bob was able to read the message fine using the key they created together. So while they were doing that, they had the third AI, Eve, try to intercept their message and decipher it. She was trying to decode what the other two AIs were creating. But Eve failed and wasn't able to break the encryption. So no big intelligence there.
Well, maybe
but
she should have just asked Alice and Bob directly, you know, so she didn't have to, like, break the code. I mean,
well,
I'm sure Alice and Bob didn't appreciate Eve trying to spy on their
communication. But that obviates the need for a code. I mean, you want the machines to learn how to decrypt. You want them to figure out the codes.
Wait a minute. I thought it's okay for Alice and Bob to decrypt, to encrypt and decrypt, because the message is between the two of them. And Eve here is acting like a hacker.
Yeah,
she's acting like a nosy neighbor who's trying to find out something she doesn't deserve to know.
Well, yeah. Yes, you do have this. But that's, you know, that's the nature of national security, too. You know, you got to do that sort of thing. And also security on other levels of...
I see. So Eve is representing
so she represents
the Uber
an archetype,
government.
An archetype
Eve is representing
of,
the Uber overlords who want to know everything about you, whether
someone,
you give them consent
or
not.
No, you give her too much power. She's just someone who likes to figure out codes.
But she couldn't figure it out.
Encrypt. She couldn't. She's working on it. She's trying to learn it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that spawned a lot of complex compliments. Some people are really afraid that is, you know, that these robot overlords. So one person puts in, I just hope they kill us quickly.
Well, forget. I am definitely not voting to put that person in charge.
No, that's not in charge.
Not my priorities. Thank you very much.
Somebody said, Eve didn't behave poorly. Bob just had the key.
Hey, we have a caller, by the way.
Oh,
would
okay.
you like some comments from real callers, or you want to get comments
from
the...
No, let's bring in our real callers. Okay. Absolutely.
All right. Hello, Richard from Pacific Grove. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Yes.
Well, welcome to me, but look, hey, Doc, you got to knock it off. I'm from New York. I found more arrogant people on bicycles in California than even close to New York.
Really? You sure they weren't from New York?
Yeah. Did you ask them?
You ask them where they were from? Hey, where are you from?
Enough of that. California, it's my right to Fornians.
So let me just ask you, as a native New Yorker, do you think it's true that love means never having to say you're sorry?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't know where you guys get this nonsense from. You sound like old Johnny Carson retreads. I'm serious. Johnny Carson did so much damage. Here we're talking about New York. That little whip never walked the streets of New York.
Oh, well, straighten me out. Well, what do I need to know about New Yorkers? How do
she's
spot?
From Nevada.
I'm a Westerner.
They are the nicest people in the world.
They'll take the shirt off the back for you. That's true. Absolutely.
I've had people, I've shown it to them time and time again. Anywhere between the bus drivers and the taxi drivers, they'll help you get out of their way to help you.
No, well, you know what it really comes down to is that New Yorkers aren't afraid to stand up for their rights.
That's right. That's right. Don't be embarrassed about people aren't afraid to stand up for their rights.
Yeah, that's important. That's real important.
Next thing you're talking about... solar power and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
How great it is.
30 seconds, my friend. We've got to go to
what's
a break.
What's your question?
Solyndra.
One more time?
What happened to Solyndra?
Solyndra.
Oh, yeah, that was a debacle. But don't get the technology messed up with the sick politics. I mean, I really would prefer to think of the technology as a little bit bigger than that.
All right, we got to go. Come back in the next hour, okay? We're heading out now.
Okay.
Future Show. The first hour is over, but we will be back with our guest, Julia Bystrova, and we'll be talking about the future of community. Stay tuned. World of tomorrow.